Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/truetransparencypricing. Happy you'll be if the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Blake Bedingfield presented by Ramjack of Middle Tennessee. If you think your home might have a foundation problem, don't make things worse by putting it off. Your house is the most valuable investment. Call Ramjack, 615-726-1504, 726-1504, or visit ramjackmiddletennessee.com.
Your thoughts on Simmons emerging next week and what he might be able to add to this team in the early stages with a 12 to 20 play appearance?
You know, when you look at now it's about an 8 months recovery from a ACL tear, you're not going to get a lot in terms of a high number of snaps. I think the last thing that'll come is the pass rush, the ability to win one-on-one. You know, he's going to be strong. The knee is going to be strong. The ACL, the actual ligament, will be tight and strong. It's the other muscles around it that you have to be concerned with, but that's why they have trainers and orthopedic doctors to verify that that's going to be okay. But it's the quad, it's the hamstring, it's the calf around it to make sure. But luckily he plays a position that doesn't require a lot of stop and go and cutting. He's going to have to be able to brace that knee versus double teams, being able to hold up versus the run. But, you know, I would like to see him in practice, especially in a physical practice, to see how he holds up. And I'm sure they're going to give him that opportunity before they put him in a live game versus players that don't have his safety in their best interest.
Are you as surprised as I am that Paul has this story as we go into week six?
I am. You know, I think 9 months is usually the minimum. And, you know, you're looking at 8 months. And he's a big, strong guy. But I don't know why you want to rush it at this point. Like I said, I think the pass rush is going to be the last thing that comes to his game. And right now, playing the run, Daquan Jones is doing an excellent job. There's very few others that are getting the opportunities or high number of snaps. Whose snaps now is he taking? Is he taking Daquan snaps? Is he taking Jarrell Casey snaps? I think that'll be an interesting thing moving forward.
Well, whose job was he drafted to take
over? He's probably going to be that five technique on the outside, which is a Daquan, but they can slide Daquan to a nose. But right now they're running a lot of four-man front with the two rushers on the outside and two defensive linemen on the inside. So you're really, and I say four-man front, the two are still standing up, but
yeah.
It's really just two defensive linemen in a lot of sets. And usually that's Jarrell and a Daquan Jones with various players mixing
in. So he'd be taking
in.
Daquan
he
Jones.
He would be taking Daquan, who's playing at a high level right now.
What, who's playing up to standard on this team?
I'm eager to hear this answer.
You know, I think when you look at it, and I mentioned Daquan, I think Daquan is doing what he's asked to do, what his skill set allows him to do, which is play the run. He made a couple plays in the game on Sunday, and he's been pretty consistent with that all year. He's not going to be a pass rusher. It's not part of his game. It's not part of what he is. You know, I think when you look on the second level of the defense, you look at Rashawn Evans. Rashawn's playing very well, I think, against the run. He's been physical and aggressive. He's coming downhill and attacking blockers. He's making plays. He's shooting gaps and making some plays for some loss. I don't think he's as consistent, if you're looking at a fully consistent player, in the passing game. He hasn't really rushed the passer that much or very well when he's had the opportunity, and he doesn't do a very good job in zone coverage. I think he gets lost at times, even in this pass game. But Jayon Brown's been solid, I think, and when we're talking about a consistent player, I don't think anyone on the outside you can say that about. Now, going back to the defensive backs, Kevin Byard and really Kenny Vaccaro has been solid as well, I think. The corners, Logan Ryan. I mean, Logan Ryan's probably been one of the most consistent players all year. Again, I thought had a very good game this past week.
Seven or eight tackles this week.
You know, Logan does a good job. I thought one of his best plays in the game was when on that pass to Isaiah McKenzie. It was kind of a reverse, but they call it a pass because he pitched it in front. And that was going for a touchdown. And Logan Ryan hustled from the backside of the play and ran him down and made the tackle. Even after a big gain, that's not a tackle if Logan Ryan doesn't hustle down from the backside. So that was not only a good play, but it was a hustle play. And that's what you want to see out of a player that's been consistent. But that's on the defensive side, and that's it. Your two safeties, your nickelback.
What about Butler?
I think Butler's been inconsistent. I mean, they are attacking Butler. Even in this game, they were attacking him, whether it was Duke Williams or John Brown. They were going to his side, not Adoree's side. They were working Malcolm Butler and working him for first downs.
How about offense?
You know, I think offensively, I think offensive line's been in shambles. I think that's been talked about. You know, Ben Jones has not been attacked that much this year. What I mean, they're not putting pass rushers on his nose very often like they did last year. Last year, he was someone that teams wanted to attack. This year, they're attacking the guards, and teams are having success doing that. So why mess with anything else? I think Ben Jones has been okay. He's been solid to this point. I don't think there's been a tight end that's been consistent. I think Derrick Henry's been consistent. I think A.J. Brown at times, the one game that is the outlier is the Jaguars game where he struggled to separate. But when he's had opportunities, he's been pretty solid. But after that, you know, outside the quarterback, who I think has played well, outside of that, there's really been no one else on offense.
We're going to break down the offensive line coming up in a bit. Before that, though, you mentioned tight end, and I immediately thought of Delaney because we were – Paul and Chad and I were looking at the snap numbers yesterday from the game, and he's around 42-ish% on snaps. Is that what you thought he would be going into the year? It was less than half of the offensive snaps would be his?
Not at all. I mean, I expect Delaney to be a big part of this
offense. What do you think is going on there?
I'm not sure. I mean, when I look at him, his routes look similar to the way they did in the previous years. You know, he dropped the ball on third and four, which was, you know, uncharacteristic of a Delaney Walker, but still a big drop. But that shouldn't have taken him out of snaps. This is a guy that can get open, and he is a reliable receiver in most situations for the quarterback. And there's not another tight end that's playing above a Delaney Walker. You know, I think Jonnu Smith, in the limited role that he's playing, has been pretty solid this year. Even as a blocker, which has been a negative in the past, he's gotten better as a blocker this year. He had the nice long run on the tight end screen, which kind of showing that burst and that speed back coming back from that injury. But he's been solid and consistent, but nothing to where he should take Delaney's snaps. I still think Delaney's a threat, and I think defenses do too, the way they try to defend him.
So are they pacing him the way they're pacing Wake to a certain extent?
You know, I don't understand it. I mean, I think when you're 2-3 or 2-2 or, heck, 1-0, you play your best players. You know, if at some point in the season they need to give him a break, you know, that's okay. But you've got to win ball games, and Delaney's always been one that can play a high number of snaps and it not affect him. You know, I put my best players on the field, and I think he's one of them.
How did Taylor Lewan do in his re-emerging game?
You know, I thought Taylor played well. Going back and looking at every play on offense this morning again, you know, I'd say he won 95-98% of his snaps. And what I mean by that is, you know, he was winning in the run game and the pass. There was the one sack that was given up. He gave up a pressure to Jerry Hughes. Actually, Marcus was able to get rid of the ball. They ended up getting a holding call on the defense on that play. But he did give up an outside rush to Jerry Hughes, which put a pressure on Mariota. He gave up – there was a tackle-in stunt where Saffold, the right – or the left guard, and Taylor are supposed to work in cohesive together, and there was a miscommunication there. Taylor took his man on the inside, which was Shaq Lawson. Saffold did not play the man – and it thought that they were passing it off, which means they were kind of zoning that block. And Jordan Phillips made the sack. So there was a miscommunication there. That's part of not playing for 4 weeks together. Later in that game, they passed off that exact same stunt, held it, was fine. I think Taylor was a little gassed in this game. It looked like he was later in the game. He wasn't finishing his blocks like he normally does. Still winning his block. If you call it a plus or a negative, he's a plus on those blocks. He just wasn't finishing and sustaining his blocks as long as he usually does. But I thought he played well. He's got to clean up that one pressure that he did give up because that could have been a big play. Luckily, they got the holding call.
The holding call at the beginning, legit?
The holding call was a beginning. Was a legit. You know, I think those are things that officials could see on every play. It was a pass play. The defensive end turned to run downfield when he saw the pass play. Lewan kept a hold of his shoulder pad and wasn't allowing him downfield, which was not a good, smart play on Taylor's part because, you know, at that point, the play's pretty much over. It was already in Delaney's hands. It was a legitimate holding call by the definition of the rule. I think those are the type of things that bothers me about referees, did in this game for sure, that they call plays like that, which really had no meaning or effect on the play.
Is Roger Saffold doing anything particularly well right now?
You know, he's very inconsistent. I mean, inconsistent not only in the statistics, but, you know, the one thing that Roger was been solid at his entire career is run blocking. And he's even been inconsistent at that in these last few games. In the beginning of the season, I thought he was very good in the run game. Very inconsistent with his pass sets. He's getting beat by, you know, an easy inside spin move by Lorenzo Alexander. You know, those are things that he's got to be able to redirect his feet and be able to wall off a spin move like that.
It's almost like someone hit the pause button on his game on that spin move. He shuffles one step to the left, and then Alexander's in the backfield.
Yeah, it wasn't an immediate, and he didn't feel it or see it either. He's got to keep that right hand, especially when he sets his feet to the left. He's got to be able to keep that right hand open to protect against either an inside move or that spin move that Alexander has. But, you know, there were a couple of things. He got bull rushed early on by Jordan Phillips. Those are things that should not happen to a player of his stature, of his physical stature. What I mean, he got bulled right in the pocket, pushed right into Mariota, and then Jordan Phillips came up with a sack.
I said my piece yesterday on Saffold, but you mentioned the bull rush, and it makes me think we have seen one of these rushes per game since the preseason with this guy. It happens every single week where he's ending up on the ground,
and it's not getting corrected. And that's the problem, is these things have to get corrected. You're not talking about a rookie here that is growing. You're talking about a 31-year-old veteran that's played in this league that has to be able to correct the mistakes, the technical mistakes, the off-the-snap mistakes. Something has to be corrected, not only from the offensive line coach protecting him, but also because that's what needs to happen now. He needs to be protected. I know what they paid him to do. I know what he came in with money-wise, but he has to be protected, or there's going to be games like this where he gives up multiple sacks.
What can they do? What can – like behind the scenes, if you were there, what would the setup be where you make recommendations, or who would be doing that for who could replace him, what they could do to shuffle the line if they're even considering that?
You know, right now it's like a batter in Major League Baseball that can't hit the curveball. Go back to when he was hitting. What was he doing successful? Same thing here. You know, in the Rams offense, it was a lot of short sets, quick passing game. They're still using the short passing game in this game. But he's getting outside of himself. He's using too much space. A lot of that's created by the defense. They're creating that space so that they can have that one-on-one to work him. And what I mean by that is the outside rusher, they're kind of using as a pawn in this situation, where they know Taylor is going to be able to protect that outside, but he's running wide where Taylor has to get wide with him. And also, Rodgers playing in a lot of space because Ben Jones' eyes are toward the rookie, Nate Davis, and helping out a lot to the right guard. So Rodgers on his own. But the thing is, go back to what's working. Go back to what worked last year when he was with the Rams. A lot of the short sets, staying tight as an offensive line group. Taylor can still handle his outside guy. Ben Jones is going to have to peek both ways and not just lean to the rookie anymore. He's going to have to lean to the left and see if he needs help, especially against certain personnel. Jordan Phillips was having his day. That's the guy.
Was it Whitworth they brought in L.A.?
Yeah, left tackle, yeah.
So they bring in Whitworth at left tackle, and Saffold played well. And I was mentioning to Paul last week, you know, with Luan coming back, I would expect Saffold to play better. We didn't see that.
No, and he's got to tighten that up. And they've got to help him out now, whether it's a back or, like I said, the center sliding that direction.
That's inexcusable to me.
It is. I mean, it's at this point – you know, it's a little bit like the kicker. Sometimes it gets mental, and it looks like it's a little mental. It's not a physical issue. He's big, strong. He's been in this league a long time. He knows what to do. It's just I think he's, they're working him. And Jordan Phillips should not be that guy. Jordan Phillips is a big, powerful guy, but he should not win that many times on pass rush. Calais Campbell, different animal. Different player. He's done that. He's been consistent with it for years. Jordan Phillips should not have that much success.
Vrabel said yesterday about Keith Carter, basically, look, if it's players not knowing who to block or what to do, then you ask that question. They know who to block and what to do. They're not doing it often enough and consistently enough, and basically turn the question from the coach to the players. I tend to look to players first. Your thoughts on position, specifically here and generally on position coach blame versus player blame?
You know, I agree with the coach's statement. I mean, if there is not an issue with who he's blocking and he just isn't physically getting the job done, that's on the player. I mean, there's not really an offensive line coach really can't jump out there and help him pass block Jordan Phillips one-on-one. You know, he's got to get it done, or somebody else has to be in that spot. Right now, they don't have that someone else, and that's a big problem. And you've not only paid this guy and all the money, we talked about that, but, you know, he has to have help now. And that doesn't come just with the offensive line coach. That comes with the offensive coordinator. Now we're going to have to max protect, getting back to what they did early in the year to help out a Dennis Kelly. Now it's let's help out the left guard and get him right, especially against certain personnel. You know, he's had three games where he's given up sacks out of the five. Two of them were three sack games. One of them was a one sack game. So, you know, in those games where it's starting to get out of hand, they've got to help him out.
So Mike Vrabel said yesterday Saffold's one of their best five. I know it's hard to come to terms with that, but, I mean, we've seen Jameel Douglas. I don't think Grassu is going to answer anything or prove to be bad. The depth isn't good. So I'm not seeing a great alternative there unless we get into the Conklin or Kelly at guard thing, which they seem adamant about not doing. I'm not saying they shouldn't change it up there. If you're putting your best five out there, what are you doing?
I think the five they started with last week. I mean, that's the best five. Dennis Kelly was helped out a lot in the four games he started. If he goes to right tackle, they're going to have to help him out. Now you got another issue. So if you move Conklin into left guard or wherever you want to put him, which I think he could play. I think Jack could be a good guard in this league. But you're going to have the issues now on the outside protecting Dennis Kelly, which they did pretty heavily in the first four games.
I think he's better on the right than the left.
He's better on the right than the left. But the problem is Dennis is a good backup player. He's not a 16-week player, not on a good team, but he's a solid 3-4 game starter. That's what you pay that guy for. The Jason Matthews of the world that the Titans had for years. Mike Otto's. Those are guys that don't start 16 weeks that just play 3 or 4.
I think you wrote at paulkuharski.com in the preseason about how much better Conklin looked, how encouraging it was. And now I said a couple times in this game, he looked like a guy on a skateboard, like me on my kid's skateboard, falling and looking ridiculous.
I still think Jack's playing at a above average level. He's playing solid, and he's not a special player, but he's never going to be. You know, he wasn't. He's just not that kind of player. He's not a dominant physical player like a Taylor Lewan. He doesn't have the athleticism. He wins with technique and fundamentals. If he loses those at times, he's going to show up in a. You know, he's going to get bull rushed at times because he doesn't have that lower body power and anchor. He's really good with his hands, good with his feet off the snap, and that's how he wins. And when he's right, you're going to see a solid player. When he's not, you're going to see a guy that can give up, especially versus a player that can go inside and out. If you can go power to speed on your rush, he can have problems because he's going to guess wrong at times.
Well,
but for the most part, Jack's solid.
The reason why Paul's bringing up if we want to go down the tackle route to move inside, the Titans right now are on pace to allow 70 sacks this season. Change is going to happen if this continues. They got to go somewhere.
You know,
they've got to do something different.
You have to. But the problem is the
quarterback stayed healthy. That's what's remarkable.
The quarterback has stayed healthy and no turnovers. You know, you're talking about a guy that's been getting sacked and hit. And there's been a number of times in the last two games where he's been able to escape sacks.
Yeah.
I counted four in this past game where he eluded four sacks and was able to get rid of the ball on an incompletion that in the past would have resulted in a sack. He's doing a better job with that. A couple of them are going to be called, in the future for intentional grounding. There were a couple that could have been called in this game. But, you know, he's doing a good job of getting away from the rush, using his athleticism there. But, that's a high number of sacks, should never happen. And there's issues there, and it really starts with the left guard.
So they're one sack away from his entire 2016 total.
Yeah, that's
which was his best statistical season. Yeah, I mean, if you want him to be the 2016 version of Marcus Mariota, block the guy in front of you first if you want that to occur, because it's not going to happen otherwise.
You know, that's the key. If you look at the other side this past week and you look at the Buffalo Bills, okay, there was very little pass rush in the first half by the Titans, and what the Bills were doing was getting rid of the ball quick. A lot of short passes, a little predetermined throws, get the ball out of Josh Allen's hands because he struggles to read coverages downfield, and he holds the ball and he pats the ball and he takes a lot of hits and sacks that way. They were predetermined throws and they were getting it out of his hand, but they were doing that and it was helping him stay alive, staying healthy, especially coming off the concussion. You see a little bit of that in the Titans game, Titans offense, where they're getting some passes out quick, whether it's a screen to Corey Davis or, trying to screen to Deion Lewis. Quick passes, but it's just not consistent enough. And you look at the Bills versus the Titans, how many Bills receivers drop balls? There were 4 drops in this past game, 3 which would have been first downs. Those are big drops. And those are conversions that keep plays going, keep your offense on the field, your defense off, which has been a plus this year. The defense has been a plus, but they're having to go back on the field because – Deion Lewis drops 2 balls, Corey Davis drops a 50 ball, and Adam Humphries drops a first down. Those are first downs. Delanie Walker drops a ball. So there's a number of drops in this game.
Our weekly visit with Blake Bettingfield, the former Titans scout. What from the upstairs offices, how did you guys get your sense of leadership beyond like what a guy did in college? Like there was a value put on being a college captain and things like that. How do you kind of scout that? And then as the GM is assessing the locker room, like how would you go about finding the final pieces now? I feel like there's still something missing on this team that you could still have this up and down seesaw, Delanie called it, and there's not the Bullock factor, say. Do you think John looks at it and says there's not that? I don't know if he'd use Bullock as the comparison because he wasn't around for Bullock. But is there a scouting urge? Is it up on the board somewhere that you need to find that guy still?
And what was Mike Vrabel like as a player and a leader?
That you need to find Vrabel.
I mean, there's the example of what you're looking for,
example.
Right?
Yeah.
I think you look at the let's go back to 2018. They lost 2 players that weren't playing at a high level, but were leaders on this team in Brian Arakpo and Derek Morgan. Those were not replaced. Now, Wesley Woodard is a leader. He always has been. Ever since he entered in the building, he was a leader. Jarrell Casey is a leader on this team. To some degree, I'm going to say Daquan Jones is a leader. The way he can kind of he helps mold some of the younger players. He did that. When I was there, he was a guy that did that. Kevin Byard is a leader. Logan Ryan's a leader.
I'm looking for a guy that crosses positions.
But you know what?
Wouldn't Bullock go to an offensive lineman who's not delivering and get in Eugene Amano's face? Is there a guy on this team that would do that?
There are fiery leaders like a Keith Bullock. There are fiery guys that do that. There are guys that lead by example. The Kyle VandenBosch's. Kyle didn't talk to anyone else on the team, but boy, did you want to mimic the way he practiced and played and the energy level that he played with. But, there were certain guys like Keith that could do that. Offensively, I think a Delanie Walker could do that. A Jarrell Casey could do that defensively. Those are personalities, and they've got enough skins on the wall to where someone's going to listen. They have that. They have that persona, that way of leading a locker room and leading not only a position group. There are position group leaders and there are team leaders, but there's a lot of team leaders on this. Kevin Byard can do that. Kevin Byard has that fire in him to be able to go across to the offense and lead. The thing is that are they allowed? And I can't answer that question. I'm not in the building. I don't know what the coaches do from that standpoint. I know there was, when Jeff Fisher was the head coach and you had a Greg Williams and a Mike Heimerdinger, there wasn't a lot of overlapping in terms. Greg handled his defense. Mike handled his offense. Jeff handled the team. And that's kind of the way they did things. There wasn't a lot of overlapping until those kind of left. Big personalities, like they have enough big personalities and strong players to be able to lead this team. I don't think that's an issue. But going back to how you evaluate those players, it's not something you grow into. It's something you have. There are players that are just natural born leaders, whether they are, like I said, by work ethic, by being able to get groups together and work out. And when they pick up the phone and say, hey, we're going to work out at 6 a.m. at so-and-so practice field, you're going to be there. You're not going to miss that because, you're not going to disappoint that player. And they have enough players like that on this team.
What was your reaction whenever you saw that Santos was going out for the 53-yarder?
Didn't understand it. I couldn't even grasp why he would go out there. You know, even in that situation, you're talking about a long field goal. So you're putting the Bills offense in a great position if he missed, which, you know, during that game, he had no chance of making. There was just no way mentally he was going to make that kick.
Well, also the two-score aspect of it. You're also saying it's not just go complete this last 35, 40 yards and score to tie it. It's you're going to kick a field goal, and then you're going to rely on your offense, which has done nothing, to drive the length of the field again and score a touchdown to win.
Right. It makes no sense, really, because those 3 points mean nothing to you. You're down by four. You still got to score. You know, you've got the best punter in the NFL. He has been great at pinning kicks down inside the 10. Your defense has been strong all game. Play those two strengths out. Play your punter. Play your defense. Get the ball back, hopefully on the 40, 45, 50, if you can hold them, and get the ball back and have a chance to score. Those three points really
matter. Or go for it with the rationale that you had in Jacksonville, where, we're finally kind of down there. This is the time.
That's what I'm thinking. In that situation, I would go for it, thinking, here's one of two drives we're going to have remaining. I've got confidence in my defense. That doesn't change. That if I don't convert here, we're going to get the stop and get the ball back for a second possession. But I'm not kicking the field goal even if I had suck up right there.
No, I'm playing the punt defense game because that's really your two strengths of your team right now is the punter also, and the defense.
And you go pin them down there and you put Josh Allen in a situation where maybe you make another mistake and get the second turnover.
You know, it wasn't until that last drive with 4 minutes on the clock that the Bills really started to run the football successfully. You know, they had a couple of runs that were okay, but, you know, until that last four-minute drive where they ended the game, I mean, they really had not run the ball successfully. And the Titans still had two timeouts and the two-minute warning.
And that one long run by Gore where he cuts to the outside on that four-minute offense, there was nobody around him. That was the one time where you're just like, whoa. In the camera frame, there's no defender.
Yeah, and you had the, you know, missed tackle. Harold Landry kind of gave up contain on that play, and Gore was off to the races. So, and he's that kind of back.
The Broncos had the longest losing streak in the NFL, the longest active losing streak, until this past week where they finally got their first win. 1-4. Let's just look at the strengths of this team. Does it start with Philip Lindsay in the run game, or is it actually in the pass game with Sutton and Sanders?
You know, I think this week it was Philip Lindsay. You know, Lindsay can be a multidimensional back. He can be a good receiver out of the backfield. If they're able to block up the front, which was an issue earlier in the season, you know, he can be a guy that breaks for big gains at times. Cortland Sutton's coming to his own. He's a big, strong, physical X receiver. And with Flacco as a quarterback who's going to be more stationary in the pocket, you know, he's a big, good thrower, short to intermediate at times. And Cortland's going to be that type receiver. If Noah Fant's back, their first-round pick, the tight end out of Iowa, that gives him a stretch of the field tight end that can get up the seam and be disruptive that way. I think the offensive line is shaky. You know, I know Mike Munchak is there, and he's probably doing his best to put the five best players together. But they're a little shaky, especially at left tackle with Garrett Bowles. But, you know, defensively losing Bradley Chubb, the outside pass rusher, is a big loss. You're talking about two very good pass rushers in Von Miller and Bradley Chubb. You know, those are big losses for the Broncos. Personnel-wise, they're in the bottom 5-7 in the league. And, you know, this is a game the Titans should win.
Elway's made some head-scratchy moves with that roster.
You know, he has, and, you know, the problem is it's been hard for him to get the quarterback straight. And, you know, from a former quarterback, the best quarterback he's brought in was Peyton Manning. And that was
second best is?
I don't know.
Probably Joe Flacco.
Yeah, I mean, today. But you're
saying something.
And you know, it's still, and that's hard because you're giving up.
Hutton's twin is the second
Trevor
best.
Oh, Trevor Siemian.
Trevor Siemian, yeah.
Those are big draft choices that you're constantly using on quarterback to get it right. And, you know, they're lacking at some other positions as well. And, you know, that's.
Where did Philip Lindsay come from? Not school-wise. I'm saying, like, last year there was a stretch where people thought he was just a flash in the pan, and then he started down this path of consistency.
I think you see a lot of running backs like that. You know, Aaron Ecker with the Chargers is a very similar type player where they get into a scheme that fits them perfectly. They can catch balls out of the backfield. They can run. They're not going to be 15 to 20 carry guys, but they're going to be 15 touches a game, which fits right into what they want to do. You're going to have a second back. The Broncos really don't have that second back that is a good complement to Lindsey when he's out. Where the Chargers do with Melvin Gordon, obviously. But, you know, it's fitting the right player in the right personnel. You put him in a system where they're going to run in between the tackles consistently, he's not going to be that same type player. Now, he does have a little bit of wiggle, a little bit of juice to him, and the ability to catch the ball in the backfield.
It's a shame that you can't see some of this. And Blake's not the only guy. A lot of times you talk to scouts or even GMs, and when he says a little bit of wiggle, he makes a gesture with his hand. When he's talking offensive lineman, he's got like a closed fist and he'll gesture with his...
The motion.
Yeah. So you're missing it. We're going to have one time when we have an intern in here on this day, we'll have a little video that takes each of the hand gestures because you're missing out.
He's about to give you a hand gesture right now.
Yeah. I mean, we're not on TV right now, didn't we?
Yeah, right. Our simulcast, our big simulcast plan from the day we launched is still...
What's open against this Broncos defense? The short passing game, is it available for the Titans in this game? Corners matched up against the Titans wide receivers. Is this a good game for a slot receiver? What do you see?
I think this is a good game for the outside receivers, Corey Davis, A.J. Brown. This is a good game for Derrick Henry. Got to get back to running the football. Derrick's been one of your most consistent players, not only just on offense, but consistently on the whole team.
How about outside zone behind those two guys on the left?
You can run on this team. They lack depth. They don't have the inside backers to come in and take on a Derrick Henry. The defensive line is solid, but they're not those big run-stuffing defensive linemen. They're going to be move guys. You know, they have some players up front. They don't have that second group. And if you can pound them, keep the ball, you know, you can do a lot of things. The outside corners are not special. These are corners that the receivers should have good games against. This is something to be kind of – this is the first game maybe they can be multidimensional on offense and be able to pass and run and have a lot of success. A little bit like they did with the Falcons, but add a little bit more to the receiving game.
Quick college question for you. I'm sure you're going to be paying attention to Florida and LSU. You going to learn a lot about Joe Burrow in this game?
You know, I think so. I think as Joe goes along, you know – When you have a very talented team like LSU or Alabama or Ohio State, you know, the quarterback's going to look good, especially when he hits short passes to receivers that can take the ball a long way. And then when you get a lead, you can extend that lead, you know, just by being on offense and having playmakers around. But, you know, I think Joe is improved from his last year to this year. I'm not ready to say he's a top quarterback in this draft yet, but I want to see
where him play. Is he right now?
You know, I think you know, just because I think there's two right now. I think there's two that I like, and that those are both underclassmen in Tagovailoa and Jake Fromm, different quarterbacks, but both winners and both starters in the NFL.
So you're not into Herbert?
I'm not as much. I like Herbert. I think he's a starter in the NFL, but right now I don't like his complete game.
Okay.
You know, I think there's some guys that are just not performing.
It sounds like you're still undecided on Burrow.
You know, I am. I want to see him play against – he's going to have to play against Florida. He's going to have to play against Alabama. He's going to have to play against these top defenses.
Yep. And we'll see
and
that.
And I want to see that and see how he performs versus those. It's kind of easy to pick apart Utah State at times. Even though he didn't have a really good first quarter in that game, he struggled a little bit. He came out at the end, had a big statistic game.
Chad's all in on Brian Maurer.
I'm not all in on
Savior.
I'm all in on being better than Jarrett Garantano. Right.
All on Garantano.
It's not too hard to do that. But, you know, you talked about it with Burrow. Jake Fromm, I'm watching that game and I'm thinking, he had a 44-yard completion to a running back that was his fifth read. He said after the game he never got pressured. He said he got to a fifth read and threw it to him. I mean, that's not hard to do either. I like Fromm a lot also, but he's got a lot of good players around him as well.
You know, he does, but I tell you what, you look at Fromm and you start to go back and with quarterbacks especially, look at their track record. What's their success? And I'm talking about going way back to high school. This guy's been a premier-type player, whether it's baseball, football, for years. Going back to high school, middle school, this guy's, you know, never really not performed. He goes in with a quarterback like Jacob Eason, five-star player, he beats him out. Justin Fields comes in, five-star quarterback, beats him out. There's something about Jake Fromm that not only with the team that they have, but he has the ability to make players around him better. And I don't mean he's a we're not talking about he's the be all end all a quarterback, but I like him as a starter in the NFL. I like his skill set. I like his competitiveness. I think he is smart. When you talk about his fifth read on the progression, he's got three offensive linemen that are going to go to the NFL pretty quick, and that's not too many teams can say that.
Blake Bedingfield, presented by Ram Jack of Middle Tennessee. If you think your home might have a foundation problem, give Ram Jack a call, 615-726-1504, 726-1504, or visit ramjackmiddletennessee.com. Blake, thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Great to be here.